Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hard to imagine that Canada's ever seen a more emotionally charged puck drop.
From the heart of the prairies, Humboldt, Saskatchewan, a city of 6,300 residents, 60 minutes east of Saskatoon, and tonight, the center of the hockey world.
5 months after a horrific crash killed 16 people, including the team's head coach, assistant coach, trainer, play-by-play announcer, bus driver, and 11 players, somehow, hockey was back in Humboldt this week. On Wednesday night, the team played its first home game since the April accident, and if it was possible for a heart to break and overflow at the same time, the Elgar Peterson Arena is where it happened. How does a team and a town rebuild itself so quickly? I'm not sure whether or not it's crazy that a hockey game means so much so soon after a tragedy like this, but clearly it does. So what's happened in Humboldt since the crash? And what's going to happen now that the team is back on the ice? Will they ever be just young men playing junior hockey again? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
When I asked him about entering into the arena and what it was like, he was driving in with his son, Caleb. He looked over at Caleb and he said, "I'm really glad you're not on one of those pitchers."
Ryan McKenna is the Saskatchewan correspondent for the Canadian Press. He started his new job about a month before the crash, and the crash has been his job basically every day since. Ryan, tell me about Humboldt. You've spent a lot of time there over the last few months.
Humboldt is really like any other small town in Saskatchewan. It's not overly special in any particular way, other than the fact that it is home of the Humboldt Broncos. It's a fairly storied junior A franchise in Canada in terms of tier two junior A franchises go in the country, and the Broncos are what it's known for. But the people here are very similar to what you would normally get in Saskatchewan, and it's about a 2.5 hour drive north of Regina.
5 months ago, you were pretty new to this gig when the bus crash happened. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I was sitting at home after I'd worked all day, and I got a text from a friend of mine in Toronto and asking me if I'd heard about the bus crash, and I said no, but I'll look into it. So I looked on Twitter briefly, and not even 30 seconds later, our deputy Western chief with the Canadian Press, he gave me a phone call, and he told me to start driving, and that was essentially how it started. And that evening, I drove 7.5 hours or something like that. I first got about 15 minutes from Humboldt, and then I was told to head to Nipawin, which is near where the crash took place. And so I got into Nipawin about 1:45 in the morning. I got a phone call from our national desk in Toronto, which is open 24/7, asking if I could do a TV hit for CNN. And I was just like, it's 2 o'clock in the morning. I just finished driving for the last 7.5 hours. I didn't end up doing it, but the next day was trying to figure out how this happened, what happened, where things stood, because there was a lot of unknowns. So there was just a ton of different things that were taking place.
When you think back to the scene of that crash and the first time you saw it, and the fact that they played hockey in Humboldt on Wednesday night, how did they get back to the ice 5 months later?
It took a lot of different work from a lot of different people. The assistant general manager for the Broncos played a key part in scouting and recruiting. Someone like Michael Clark, he's a 20-year-old player from Medicine Hat, Alberta. I got a chance to chat with him before the home opener. He got traded from his Alberta Junior Hockey League team to Humboldt. He had told me that he just wanted his last year to be special. And so it's guys like that that wanted to help Humboldt heal and help make an impact. And he's now one of the assistant captains on the Humboldt Broncos this season. And former president Kevin Gehringer was the face of this tragedy. I'm sure you've seen his his face and his interviews, right. his quotes over the last number of months. And both himself and the board worked tirelessly to try and help the community heal and trying to get a team on the ice, which in turn helps the community heal.
We kind of see this. I mean, we're in Toronto and the rest of Canada is obviously, the rest of the world, like you said, has followed this story. And we kind of see it from a bird's eye view. And it's an inspiring story of getting back on the ice after a tragedy. What's it been like to be on the ground in Humboldt over the last 5 months? What kind of things do people talk about at the grocery store or say when they greet each other in the streets? How much is this a part of conversation?
From the different conversations that I've had with different folks, it's at the point now where people are ready to not talk about the crash constantly. They're ready to move on or take a step forward in a lot of senses. And I think that's sort of the sense that the home opener was able to give was a step forward. And I talked to a few people around the crowd and stuff, and a lot of them were saying that game was a bit of a push forward, like, okay, we've got the first game underway. Let's continue to try and heal. Let's continue to try and grow from this. It's more so a process of taking a step forward.
What was it like to be in that arena before the game, in the minutes and hours leading up to the game on Wednesday night?
In the lead up, it was interesting. There was a lot of different memorial tribute stuff outside. One of the different aspects that there was pictures of the 16 people who died. So as you were driving into the actual arena, each one of the 16 people who died had an individual picture on the grass in the lead up to the parking lot. And that was moving for sure. And then you, as you're walking into the arena, to your right, there's a bench, a green Broncos bench with wording inscribed, and beside that there's a picture of last year's team, and then immediately right beside the door there was 16 hockey sticks with green and yellow ribbons at the top of them as a signal to the 16 lives that were lost. And then you get to the actual opening ceremony, and they held the actual tribute until after the game, which from talking to different people around the community was the right move to do. But in the pregame ceremony, they were introducing all the players, and then they left the two surviving players who ended up playing on this year's team to the last. And as soon as they announced Derek Patter's name, he was one of the two survivors, the crowd just erupted, and they stood up, they started cheering.
From Edmonton, Alberta, forward, number 23, Derek Patter!
It was a bit of an emotional moment, but it was also a bit of a triumphant moment in some senses. Like, they were proud that both Derek and Braden Cameron, who's the other surviving player and came out after Derek onto the ice, they were proud that those guys have been resilient and are playing for their community and their city. And then there was the moment of silence. They also introduced the surviving players that were on hand. And then those surviving players were part of the ceremonial puck drop. And seeing the hugs between the survivors and Cameron and Patter hugging each other, it was an emotional moment to see that and those guys, just the bond that they had as teammates.
I wanted to ask you about Cameron and Patter in particular. What's it been like for them? Have you talked to them? How did they deal with coming back to a completely different team and playing hockey so quickly? They obviously overcame some pretty severe injuries, too.
They did, yeah. Cameron, I believe, had a concussion, and that was impacting him. Patter hasn't done a whole lot of media interviews, so I'm not able to speak so much to his condition and his point in getting back to this level. But for Cameron, it's one of the points that he iterated to me in our one-on-one chat on Tuesday was that it's been a long process, but that he was adamant about wanting to play for the 16 people that died in that bus crash, and also playing for those who are potentially paralyzed or injured or can't play anymore. And so he was adamant about wanting to play for those guys this season. And just the conversations with Cameron, he was very honest in his assessment of where things are at. And it's been a difficult process for him, but he's trying his best to move forward and to carry the memories of those who died and also to honor those who may not be able to play anymore.
Did you talk to any of the surviving players and their parents who aren't on the team this year, either because of injuries or something else? And how did they feel last night, and how did they deal with it?
Yeah, Caleb Dahlgren, who is one of the faces of the survivors, he spoke, as well as his father, Mark Dahlberg, spoke before the game. And for Caleb, he had said that it didn't feel overly weird to walk in the front door for him this year. For the home opener, he felt as though, you know, I'm on a new team now. He's playing for the York Lions of the Ontario University Athletics in U Sport. So he sort of felt as though a little bit that, you know, he's on a new team now. This is not his team. But he felt it was important to be there to honor those who weren't there, to be with the other survivors who were in attendance. He felt it was really important. Caleb's dad, Mark, had a really touching story. And when I asked him about entering into the arena and what it was like, I told you the story earlier of the pictures that were set up as you're coming into the arena of the 16 lives lost. And he said as he was driving in with his son, Caleb, he looked over at Caleb and he said, "I'm really glad you're not on one of those pictures." And that was a really touching moment. And I think that just resonates with a little bit of the sentiment of, yes, there was some survivors, but there was also families of 16 people who didn't make it from that April 6th bus crash.
Of all the people you've met in and around Humboldt and involved with this team over the last 5 months, who's really stuck with you and what will you remember?
Oh, I'll remember a lot of people. Anytime you do a story of this magnitude, there's certain people, I guess, that you see all the time that will stick with you forever almost. And two of those people for me are Kevin Gehringer, who is now the former president of the Humboldt Broncos. Him and I were at almost every news conference about the team and have developed a bit of a, you know, we'll see each other and we'll say hi type thing. And then also Scott Thomas, whose son Evan died in the crash. And Scott has been a bit of a voice for the families. He spoke during the post-game ceremony and the tribute and thanked numerous people for everything that they've done, the support that they've given and everything. And those two people and the impact and how open they've been throughout this entire difficult process are two voices and two faces that will always stick with me.
What was the hockey like when the ceremony was over and they dropped the puck?
I think it took a few minutes to actually get going, as one would expect. I mean, it's also an emotional game to begin with, but it's also the home opener, and neither of these teams have played a whole lot with each other. But once the game got going, it was just, you know, Tier 2 junior hockey, right? It's hockey at the end of the day. You know, there were some great saves in the third period by Dane Dow, the new Humboldt Broncos goaltender. He got the team of the game and I mean, Humboldt was pressuring there in the third period. They had a chance to tie it up, but a nice save by the Hawks goaltender prevented that. But the hockey aspect was definitely still there and prevalent.
Is that kind of what happens now to this team in general? Is there a point where this actually just becomes kind of a normal hockey season as much as it can be?
I think so. Someone had asked the new team president, Jamie Brockman, that question whenever the Stanley Cup was here about 3 weeks ago or so. And when does it become a normal game in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League between the Humboldt Broncos and the Melfort Mustangs? And Brockman, he didn't really know. And it is sort of tough to say. I think, you know, a lot of people have said it, from families of those affected to just anyone in general, that time heals. And I think in some senses, that's the sentiment that I'm getting around the team as well, is that, you know, eventually it will get to that point, but there's still so many firsts, I suppose, to come. You know, first road trip, that's on Friday to Nipawin. First maybe home game without all the media attention. What is that like? That's next Saturday. It's tough to say when I'll get to that point.
We know each other a little bit from our respective times with Sportsnet. I know you're a hockey guy. I can't imagine that you got into it to cover stories like this. What's the last 5 months been like for you?
Well, it's interesting, right? Because you mentioned my background at Sportsnet. And I mean, I was a sports reporter for the last number of years in Toronto. And the opportunity to come to Saskatchewan was an opportunity to get some more reporting experience and do some news and try some different things. And I would have never predicted myself that this would be the story potentially of the year. And it would be a bit of a sports base. I mean, you can never really prepare to cover a story of this magnitude. It's definitely been difficult at times, especially during the tribute as they're raising the banners and retiring the numbers of those people who died in the crash. I think emotional is definitely one of the prevalent words for sure.
What do you think this team can do for Humboldt this year? And does it matter how they do on the ice?
I think just being there is sort of the sentiment that I get from people in the community that I talk to, just knowing that they can go to a Humboldt Broncos game and hop on over to Elgar Peterson Arena on a Friday night and watch the team. Just knowing that they're going to be there is a bit of a healing aspect of sorts. I spoke to a former assistant coach in 1980 with the team, and he lives in nearby Munster, Saskatchewan. And he just sort of said that the Humboldt Broncos mean a ton to this community. They generate some revenue as well for the different businesses and that sort of thing. And also, I think one of the things that we've noticed too, since the Broncos of last year were thrown into the spotlight, is just how community-based late coach Darcy Hogan made this team and how respectful he tried to pick his individuals to be on the squad. And I think the Broncos themselves have a large impact on the community. They try to do their best to help out and make the community a better place. And I think having them back from the individuals that I talked to is a helping and a healing process in its own.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Ryan McKenna, Saskatchewan correspondent for the Canadian Press. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can visit thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can check out our complete archives. You can contact us with story ideas, or you can hit us up on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. Please subscribe and rate us, review us, tell your friends. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Go Broncos. We'll be back Monday.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.